open a public hearing on House Bill. Well, hold on. Either of you have a time constraint in particular? And how many people do you have, and how many people do you have? I'm trying to figure out who's going to be quicker.
I think we've probably got at least five.
Five?
If Johnson shows up, maybe six.
Do you mind if I just get their story?
Now I am testifying against it.
Wow.
Okay, why don't I open a public hearing on House Bill of 2034. And please join us and bring your guests with you. And so tell us what this is all about. We figure there's some story behind this, but we just don't know what it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Andy Olson. I'm State Representative from Albany, House District 15. And I have with me two farmers. I know you like farmers, Mr. Chair, and committee members. We have Bill and Karen Sheeler. The House Bill 2034 is essentially what it is a little bit of a carve-out from legislation that had occurred back in 1973 from this building dealing with land use, but specifically for Park and Recreation Department. Bower State Park is located on the west side of Albany, just outside of the city limits, and there are a number of other small farms located in that same area. The Sheeler Farm is located alongside of Bower State Park, and I'll just kind of describe to you too. The park itself, and I think if you're getting a picture of that, it gives you a little snapshot then of what the park itself is and where it's located. But the Sheeler property is located just a little bit on the south side of that. And that's 260 acres, I think it is.
Correct.
The park itself is primitive. It has not been developed yet. But it's identified on the website, as you Google it, as a state park. So that kind of creates a problem for access. One of the things that we've been worried about with the Sheelers, as well as for myself, is that there is the potential of this state parks being able to have eminent domain of taking all of their property to create a path to gain access to the park itself. All this bill does right now is kind of just carve out a piece to protect their property. They're still interested in wanting to have people be able to have access to the park, but it's going to have to be a little bit different discussion at this time, Mr. Chair and committee members. And with that, I'm going to basically let Bill share with you his perspective on what's going on there.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity today to talk to you. I am Bill Sheeler. I live in Albany, Oregon. I have lived or been associated with this property that I live on next to Bower State Park for 61 years. I was a young man when the state of Oregon purchased the property along the Willamette River in Linn County as part of the Greenway Project. When property was being purchased for Bower's Rock State Park, much of the property was acquired under the threat of eminent domain. As landowners, it was a very stressful and emotional time. It was my understanding and that of my neighbors that in 1973, the Oregon State Legislature enacted legislation to ensure landowners' property could no longer be threatened by eminent domain for state parks. In 2014, I became aware of the fact an exemption had been made to that legislation concerning property adjacent to Bower's Rock State Park. The largest part of that adjacent property, I own and operate my farming business. I'm here today to ask the legislature to give me, my family, and all other property owners adjacent to the park the same respect and protection as were given in Oregon. My wife and I own and operate a farm that was first homesteaded in 1899. Since the time the Edholm family homesteaded the property, it has been a fully functioning farm. Today, that farm supports our family and contributes close to $1 million to the local economy. I have lived as a neighbor next to Bowers Rock State Park since 1978, and for the past 15 years, I or my son have leased 114 acres of ground from the State Parks Department. We have worked hard to implement farming practices that will enhance and protect the property. Some of the property owned by the Parks Department was originally part of our property. We have a respect for the purpose of all the property in our neighborhood, and we are recognize the importance of state parks for citizens of Oregon. The Bowers Rock State Park property has never had a maintenance plan or funding to implement one. We have been told the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department would never use eminent domain, but that is not something we feel we can always count on. From 1989 until September 2014, there was a development study in place which included Oregon Park Recreation Department owning our entire farm and the land of several of our neighbors. For 25 years, that plan was in place, and we lived with that possibility, yet not once were we ever involved in discussions about the park. With that plan, while that plan was rescinded in September 2014, that action does not make us feel comfortable with the future of our farm and family legacy when the state of Oregon holds the power of eminent domain. We want to ensure our farm will pass to our children without them worrying whether or not they will be forced to give up their home, work, and passion. We will always be a watchful and supportive neighbor whenever possible, but need to be able to do that threat-free. I ask you to help protect our rights as citizens of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Would you like to say something as well, or are you just here to support the...
I'm here to support, but I would like to say that we have lived...
And your name.
Oh, I'm Karen Sheeler, and I live in Albany, Oregon, and we have lived and worked cooperatively with the state parks, but I have to say that when we became aware that eminent domain was still available to the state of Oregon on our property on this particular park, that is very worrisome. We are in the transition process of our children taking over our farm, and there are several, it doesn't impact just us, it impacts several neighbors, and we just would like to live with the same things that other people have, that and not have eminent domain always there. We do support the parks, but we don't support the ability to come and take our property. So thank you.
Any question for these folks? And then we'll have the State Parks Department up after this.
Mr. Chairman?
Or at some point. Yeah, Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I don't have a question for the panel. I have a question for staff, and they might need to get back to me later with the answer to this. And I wanted Representative Olson to know that I actually do read his legislation. This measure has an emergency clause at the end, which is not unusual because actually all the bills we have before us today have emergency clauses. But I found it unusual that the summary does not reference an emergency clause when often they do. Does that create any technical problems for us?
Chair, members of the committee, it would not create any technical issues, and then I can provide you a copy with the emergency clause in it.
Are you saying you can change the relating to clause?
The staff measure?
He's not talking about the staff
measure.
I'm sorry. Summary. He's talking about the bill summary. That's probably an LC
no, it's
question.
Not. Yeah, that's. If you see right above it, it says that it's a brief statement and it's not necessarily.
34. Mr. Chairman, I've never seen a bill with an emergency clause that didn't reference the clause in the relating to section.
We can double check. I'm sure it's an oversight on LC's part.
Representative Olson, I've got your backup here.
Thank you,
Representative Witt.
Gumber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious whether the state park is it in essence landlocked, and you would be the only access into that piece of property?
We are not the only access. In another area, the state does have an easement, and they use that road We are not connected to that, but I know there is some controversy as to whether all of the public can use that road or just the state. But that is the only true access in. There's another possibility, but again, it's private property. So there are three avenues that could work to go into the park. One right now, the state has an easement to.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Witt, I mean, to kind of get directly to what your question was, and it, there's a little bit of history behind this because about a year and a half ago, Karen and also Kate Huber, who lives off of a gravel road connection. And if you take a look at that map, you can kind of see it a little bit. It's a gravel road toward the very beginning with the turn off of Bryant Park, but that's supposed to be kind of the means for access to the park, but it's not really a means because you're actually, what you end up doing is trespassing. And that's where we all started with having conversation with this, and I really greatly appreciate the folks from State Parks because they sat in on some of our meetings with their, and they were concerned about what was the issue. As a result of that meeting, this surfaced. So that's where we're at today. But it kind of gets to where you're at for access. That was what our initial access was, but that even became a problem.
Mr. Chairman? So would that trespass be the white and red line that's just outside of the greenway on this map? I'm just trying to figure out where the...
I'm sorry.
Maybe you could just describe it for me.
If you see where, if you look at your map and if you can identify where 011 is located at.
Okay.
And if you go straight north of that a mm-hmm. little bit, there's a jog there.
Yes.
That little piece there that's kind of straight toward the park itself is where the Hubers live.
Okay.
And that's where this all started, and that's off of Bryant Way that goes around circling that direction.
Okay. Thanks.
Any further questions? And if I understood it right, the way the bill's structured, it just removes a particular... It's just a town section. I mean, it describes a property here that's being deleted. Is that everything that you own and your neighbors, or is it just yours? Is it just inside the red box is what this translates into?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if Maureen... Oh, Maureen's here.
Yeah, she's going to be up in a minute.
She could really... Okay. I mean, she came down and visited with us, which I really... appreciated her coming down, so she got a good picture of what was going on.
Okay.
And she can describe this much better than I can right
okay.
now.
Okay. Any further questions for this group? Okay. Seeing none, thank you.
Why don't I just hang
on a sec, because we've got one member who is... Senator, you just want to testify and then go? Okay. And Representative, are you going to stay with your group?
I will.
Sorry, Representative Huffman. I know you have about 30 minutes. So if I do Senator Johnson now, and then you and your group then come back to Parks, will that work?
Yeah, I think they'll catch me next door when we have a vote. We're supposed to have a bill.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I've got veterans next door.
Okay. So why don't I recess? Not recess. Why don't I close for the moment the works or the public hearing on House Bill? Which one was this one? 2034, and I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2277. Take Senator Johnson's testimony, then we'll close it, then we'll come back and do all your group, and then we'll come back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your courtesy. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2277. It is complementary to another bill that you have already acted on and is now resting in Ways and Means for further budget work, and that's 2436. It has to do with maintaining dikes and levees. District 16 includes a lot of coastal and Columbia River communities that rely on drainage districts to manage levee systems. And the interest of providing better flood safety, the Corps and FEMA are more rigorously enforcing the standards. Some of the drainage districts are not organized correctly in a way to take on their more rigorous responsibilities and to provide services that are demanded of the Corps and of FEMA. And so the status quo leaves many communities and drainage districts or corporations at risk. And so this bill will provide those drainage districts who want it with increased authority to manage their flood control systems, thereby reduce the risk of flooding and protect the quality of life and economic conditions in their district. It's a great bill, and I hope the committee acts favorably on it. Thank you for your courtesy.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Johnson? Okay, if not, I will close the public hearing for now on House Bill 2227 and open a public hearing on House Bill. Well, you know, why don't we? How long is your testimony? From
yeah,
a minute or two?
To explain.
Okay, why don't we just get this dealt with so you all can leave? So let me reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2034. Please join us.
So thank you, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Maureen McGee, and I'm a deputy in the Office of Legislative Counsel. I was simply asked to come to the committee today to explain the provisions of the bill to the extent that there are questions. So I believe I can begin by answering or responding to Representative Gomberg's question earlier about the emergency clause. I do see that there is not a reference to the emergency clause in the summary. However, the summary is simply a brief editor statement of what's contained in the bill and doesn't have an effect on the actual functionality of the bill. The bill does have a reference to the emergency clause in the relating clause or in the title section, and so between having the reference in the title section and in the bill, it's taken care of. I will just explain that generally under ORS 390-1211, Parks and Recreation Department has broad authority to exercise eminent domain to acquire real property that they deem necessary for the operation and development of state parks and nature study areas. Under the Willamette Greenway Act of 1973, as the previous testimony on this bill alluded to, however, and particularly in one portion of that act that's now codified as ORS 390-338, the Park and Recreation Department's authority to acquire potential Willamette Greenway parcels through condemnation was eliminated, with the exception of five areas of land that surround previously designated Greenway State Parks. And those five areas of land are the land that is described in the 1973 session law that you see contained in this bill. So what the bill does is simply remove subsection 1 of that 1973 session law, and by doing that, it removes the Park and Recreation's authority over the land that is contained in the description in subsection 1 of that session law. And subsection 1 describes all of the land surrounding Bowers Rock State Park that the Parks and Recreation Department maintained condemnation authority over as part of the 1973 Willamette Greenway Act.
So is it accurate to say that the parks historically, so the parks have had eminent domain authority elsewhere in the state, then they, in this 1973 act, some legislature tried to restrain him from using it in a particular place except for these places where they could still use it, but they can use it elsewhere in the state too. So it's really only the place that's the Willamette Greenway coverage where they can't?
That's my understanding. Chair Clem, that's my understanding, yes.
This will be an interesting story once we hear exactly. I'm sure Peggy Lynch or someone will be able to tell us what exactly was going on here, but okay. Okay, well, I understand the way the bill's structured, at least now. Okay.
I'm happy to answer any further questions with the committee.
Is the question, I think you got your question answered, didn't you, Representative White, about where the road is?
I did, yes, thank you.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to thank Council for following up on my question.
Great. Okay, and I think I misunderstood that you were not from Parks and are from Legislative Council,
yes.
So we must have MG here from Parks as well. Why don't you finish us off here?
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is MG Devereaux, and I'm the Deputy Director for Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. We've submitted written testimony, and so I won't read that word for word other than to say the Willamette River Greenway Program is an important element of our recreation profile and speaks to the values in 1966 and 1973 of the preservation of wildlife habitat, recreation access, and buffer on agricultural property. We understand that the power of domain has unsettled some of the folks that are around Bowers Rock, and we would like very much to continue to work with those neighbors to assure them that our development of Bowers Rock and other properties along the Greenway is one that we'd seek to do in a community-based way and to make sure that when we acquire property, we do that from willing sellers. The history of the Willamette Greenway program from our understanding is that the original act in 1966 explicitly excluded eminent domain from a property acquisition avenue for the department. However, there were a number of properties in the discussion between 1966 and 73 that were not able to be folded into the Greenway program through a willing seller process, and in that discussion in 73, the bill was the act was amended to allow for those five areas because the legislature believed that those were key areas to ensuring that the vision of the Greenway program was established, and one of those areas was Bowers Rock State Park. The agency is officially neutral on this bill. We recognize, again, the concerns of the neighbors and would like to continue to work with them on any development plan as it moves forward with Bowers Rock, and would just like to remind the committee of the importance of the wildlife habitat and the buffer on agricultural avenues that the Willamette Greenway Program gives to the state of Oregon as they're considering this decision. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for MG? So the eminent domain authority, and I'm looking at your written letter, it was never actually used for the Greenway program.
Chair Clem, we have never used eminent domain for the Greenways.
That's largely your intention not to now.
Chair Clem, that is correct.
But do you want to never say never is the question, I think, for them.
So, Chair Clem, our commitment to the neighbors, the Sheilers mentioned, there was a study that was done in the 80s that was not ever officially endorsed by State Parks, but was in the public record as a potential development plan for that park. We took the action in this last September of asking our commission to essentially remove any sense that that development plan had a force of weight of the commission or was the plan that we'd move forward, and committed at that time that if a development plan were to be considered for that park, it would go through a public process that would involve neighbors and other stakeholders to ensure that that park development met the needs of the community. And if there was additional acquisition that was needed, we would go through the normal processes that we use of acquiring from willing sellers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many other state parks do we have that might be similarly landlocked, for lack of a better term?
Good question.
Representative Webb, it's hard to say in terms of landlocked. One of the accesses that this property has that makes it unique is the Willamette River as an access point. So we have a number of Greenway properties throughout the Willamette River that are boat in, which this property is also identified in our maps as boat in accesses. Generally, when we acquire property, we also want to make sure that we have access to that property so that the public can enjoy that as a recreational feature.
Thank you.
Further questions on this one? Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming. And I will close the public hearing on House Bill 20. 30. That's a different bill. 2034. It's okay. House Bill 2034. And let me open the public hearing on House Bill 2039. Please, Representative Huffman and whoever you'd like to bring, if anybody, for the initial panel.
Oh, probably. I texted Representative Johnson, didn't get an answer. So when I heard there was a Johnson in the room, I looked around and I thought, well, maybe the senator would testify on behalf of the bill, but she was. John Huffman, state rep for House District 59, which includes part of the Columbia River Gorge. House Bill 2039, in its simplest form, is just proof that...
Sorry, I forgot. I missed somebody in the last bullet. We'll come back. Sorry. My apologies.
I could stop.
No. Let's hear about it.
House Bill 2039 is proof that Senator Dimbrough is not the only person in the building that can do a task force bill. And I just want everybody to know that that was, and I hope he's listening.
I was going to say, I don't know if we'll tell him anyway.
Send him a clip later.
House Bill 2039 is Oregon's task force bill for the Columbia River Gorge Commission. Today, on the Washington side of the river, there is a companion bill that Representative Liz Pike is working through the process to create the task force, which would be one single task force. At least that's the intent. It would not set up two independent task forces to work with the Columbia River Gorge Commission. But it would be, and I believe Director Nichols is going to point that out as one of the comments from the Gorge Commission, that their intent would be that it would be one single task force from both sides of the river representative. As the bill actually points out, how many legislators would be on it, representatives from the governor's office, et cetera, and so on. So tried to do the homework, lay the groundwork for the bill, and you're going to hear some good testimony. We have a Gorge Commissioner, Roger Nichols, with us that's going to testify, the executive director, until 5:30 this evening, I think. Director Nichols, and then he, I don't know, got another offer, and he's going to go bye-bye. But 2039 will still stand, and it's a good bill. The premise of the bill is, I've been in this building almost 8 years, and every budgeting session, myself and I have had friends come along that have helped me the last several biennia, in Representative Johnson and Senator Thompson, who are also Gorge legislators. We have to come into the building and educate folks, my colleagues, as to what the Columbia River Gorge Commission is, what the scenic area is, what do they do, why do we have to fund it, what is it, where did it come from, what's the Scenic Act. It's an act of Congress dating back to 86. And so it's unique. The Gorge Scenic Area is unique in the United States. I think there are two other areas that are even similar that use compacts. With an area, we have the bi-state compact, and so that's why this would be a joint task force to work with the commission. One of the big goals of the task force for me is to identify the needs of the commission in the scope of work that the act spells out in the area of conservation and economic development within the scenic area. So find out what the needs of the commission are, where they're lacking, where we as Oregon and Washington can step up to the plate and help meet those needs for the Gorge communities. And having a representative from each of the governor's offices work with us on the task force, it's probably not going to come as a surprise to anybody here. I'm not going to be here forever. And so I can't be here, and I am not going to commit beyond my terms to come down here every odd year and explain to everybody what the need of the Gorge Commission is. And so over the years, we found out that sometimes governors on one side of the river or the other, God forbid, both at the same time, didn't have an understanding or appreciation of what the work of the Gorge Commission is and the funds that they need available to do the work. And that work and the act will be explained by testimony following me. But it's just to create bi-state cooperation, the task force, to build knowledge base, bi-state cooperation,
by state governor's cooperation and understanding that will outlive me in the building, so we have a foundation of knowledge set so that when I'm gone, the legislature can continue passing on that knowledge base of understanding of what the commission is. Because I've faced things in the past as colleagues coming up to me saying, well, we're in the process of trying to do away with some boards and commissions that are irrelevant, and we were thinking that maybe the Gorge Commission would be one of those that we could just do away with. Thoughts like that are scary when people in the building come up to me with suggestions like that, because the Gorge Commission is not just a little commission. It was set up by Congress. It's unique to Oregon in that way, and we're committed to fund it and committed to do the work. I've had colleagues come up to me and say, well, we've heard some negative press, and this largely has been 10 years and more ago, prior to Darren Nichols, the current executive director, and his predecessor that had done a lot of great work. But I've had people come up to me and say, why don't we just defund the commission? And then that way, you know, the communities in the Gorge can do what they want. Well, I don't think anybody in the Gorge that understands the act really wants that to happen. I don't care if you're on the pro-conservation end or the pro-economic development end. I happen to approach the act as an act in its completeness, and I support both conservation and economic development within the region and the act. So I will shut up here unless there are questions, because there's going to be good testimony following. But that's kind of the premise. There's no ulterior motive behind the task force bill. It's just to work with the commission to find out what the needs are and then go back to our respective states and try to sell the need for funding, for example. And you probably haven't followed this, particularly if you're not a Gorge legislator or you're not on Ways and Means. You may not understand that presently Governor Kitzhaber had put in his proposed budget substantially more funding than what Governor Inslee proposed in his budget. So we've always got that disparity going on. Usually it's not that dramatic. And so we'd like to, again, through the task force, bring some understanding as to, and also for those of you that don't know, everything has to be equal on both sides of the river. If we commit $1.25 million to the Gorge Commission funding, Washington has to match it, or vice versa. And so there's a lot of things to discuss. No ulterior motives, just trying to have a good conversation and see how we can proceed with a good foundation and understanding of the commission work.
Any questions for Representative Huffman?
Thank you.
Escaped easy. So, Darren and Roger, do you want to come up?
Mr. Chair, I have some materials in hard copy form.
Mr. Chair, as Representative Huffman leaves, I just want to thank him for his service and hope he does well in whatever chapter is next.
Yeah, it sounds like it. He's doing an exit plan, doesn't it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Darren Nichols. I'm the executive director at the Columbia River Gorge Commission. I have with me today Gorge Commissioner Roger Nichols, is an appointee from Wasco County and a resident of the Dalles, is a longtime Gorge resident and former broadcaster that covered the Gorge Commission's activities in the economy and the environment in the Gorge as a
any
news
relation?
Broadcaster. No relation, and we should say right up front that when the commission tells you later in the session that we don't have two nickels to rub together, you're getting that today. I also have with me today our in-house counsel, Jeff Litwack. Mr. Litwack is also an adjunct professor at Lewis and Clark Law School and is arguably one of the United States' foremost authorities on interstate compact law. If you have hard questions, I will ask you to refer those to Mr. Litwack. Thank you very much for hearing us today. Thank you very much to Representative Huffman for introducing the bill. I should start by saying that House Bill 2039 is one half of a legislative concept. There's a companion bill introduced in Washington right now. Mm-hmm. Washington House Bill 1954 is essentially identical language, and as you will hear over the next few minutes, our work as an interstate compact agency and as a regional planning agency requires careful bi-state coordination. That's why we're asking for your help, is to improve that level of coordination. The Gorge Commission voted on Tuesday to support House Bill 2039, but also made some recommendations and requested that the committee consider some recommendations from the Gorge Commission to clarify portions of the bill, the bills, and to strengthen the intent. So what you have in front of you is a letter from the commission signed by the commission chair that looks like this. I'm going to walk through those quickly. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the other attachments, but we'll start with that letter of support. Representative Huffman mentioned that we're not just a little commission. Oregon has, if I remember at last count, 311 boards and commissions. The Columbia River Gorge Commission is not one of those boards and commissions. The Columbia River Gorge Commission is the product of an interstate compact, a unique agreement between Oregon and Washington. The authority to enter into that agreement flows from the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, enables states to enter into agreements only with the consent of Congress. And so automatically, the Columbia River Gorge Compact requires congressional consent, and it sets up a very unique three-way agreement between the two states and the United States Congress. Also in your packet, you'll see a letter from the Senate delegations, the U.S. Senate delegations on both sides of the river, expressing similar concerns about the condition of this agency and its ability to implement that three-way federal and bi-state agreement. So what is it that we do? I'm going to step back, with your permission, for just a minute to say, what is it the Gorge Commission does? Well, we oversee land use on both sides of the Columbia River for an 85-mile stretch, basically from the edge of Troutdale out to the mouth of the Deschutes River. On the Washington side, that's the edge of Washougal, up to almost, but not including, the Maryhill Museum. The intent of the National Scenic Area Act is to protect and enhance scenic, natural, cultural, and recreation resources in that area, and to protect and support the economy of the region. So we've got a couple of big tasks right there, and some would say competing tasks. I like the way Representative Huffman described it as our responsibility is to do both of those things and to do them both well. That requires staff and resources to be able to do that work. Part of our job also is to act as stewards for a place that's been inhabited, lived, worked, and played in by residents for over 10,000 years. Our tribal partners will tell you that they've been living, working, and playing in the Gorge since time immemorial. We work with two states, four Columbia River Treaty tribes, six counties, 13 urban areas, dozens of passionate interest groups on all sides of the debate, thousands of citizens, and millions of annual visitors. Somewhere between 5 and 10 million people visit the Gorge every year. Our job as a regional planning agency is to coordinate the efforts and activities of state agencies, local governments, federal agencies, tribes, and to help all of us look forward so that we continue to be stewards of the place. That takes a lot of coordination. Over the last 28 years since the Act was passed, we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot as an agency, we've learned a lot as a commission, and we've learned a lot as a regional community about what it means to be effective stewards of a national scenic area. What we're asking for today is your support for House Bill 2039 that will enable us to do our jobs more effectively and more efficiently by working with the commission to help improve the relationship between the states and the commission, between the states and one another, and between the two states and the cities, counties, interested parties, the industries, and the interest groups that call this place home. So just quickly, the commission has asked that this committee consider the following recommendations to ensure the commission's support, and really to, I think, more than securing this commission's support, to secure the success of this bi-state effort that we're asking you to undertake. First of all, we're asking that the bill be amended to create a single bi-state task force rather than two individual state task forces. It just makes sense to us. I think it's going to be easier to administer, and it underlines the importance that the task force needs to be a truly bi-state coordinated effort. The commission is also asking that bipartisanship be required as part of this bill. Right now, the bill is structured, I think, with that intent, but the way it's written enables one or the other state to potentially appoint members from a single party, just because many of our districts are served by Republicans, both in the Gorge and in the adjacent districts. I think especially in Washington that there's a concern that we might, if under the language of the bill, we might not actually be able to appoint a member of the Democratic Party to the commission, just because of the way the districts are laid out. It's really important, not only for the work of the task force, but it's also important for the long-term durability and support for the region and the commission's work, that this be represented by both parties in both states, in both state houses. The commission also asked that we clarify the language in the bill to focus on the administrative functions of the commission. There is a lot of concern about this part of the world. We have a 10,000-year history of stewardship in the Gorge. There's a lot of interest, obviously a national interest as well as a Northwest interest, in protecting the Gorge, and especially certain parts of the Gorge, from adverse impacts. It's important that this bill focus not on the substantive protections of the National Scenic Area Act or the Gorge Compact, but that the bill focus on, instead, on the administrative functions of the relationship between the two states and the Gorge Commission. Along that same line, we're asking that the bill clearly address the roles and relationships. Right now, there's scant guidance for how we're supposed to do our job as an interstate compact agency, or how one or the other of the states should treat us. It's important to clarify those roles. It's also important to involve the regional community and the public, not on the task force itself. I think it's really important that we hear from the entire community of interest. But the task force itself needs to be populated by members of the two states and the commission. You may hear from folks asking for a seat on the task force. I understand why they want to be part of the discussion. We want them to be part of the discussion. However, in order to manage a bi-state task force, the membership needs to be limited to members from the two states and the commission itself. We've also asked that the commission play a leadership role. I think that was the intent of the bill's drafters, to involve the commission. It's not that clear in the way it's drafted that the commission itself will be an integral part of the task force's work. And then last but not least, the commission asked that the state of Oregon, through the legislative discussions, provide funding resources to help facilitate the discussion. We can probably have the discussion on our own. It would be really helpful if we had some skilled, professional, neutral facilitators to help the commission and the states have this discussion. I'll pause there because that's a lot.
Any questions at this point? Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, no. I guess the question that I have is, what the heck do we have going on here? I mean, I have never been so confused about a proposed piece of legislation as this thing is. Let me tell you where I'm at, and it has the appearance to me that we're creating a task force because we've created a Columbia Gorge Commission that, for whatever reason, is not working, or reasons, and we have a bunch of Columbia River Gorge commissioners who are so shy and retiring that they're incapable of coming forward and telling us what they need in order to be able to accomplish their mission. I mean, this makes absolutely no sense to me at all.
That you'd like to respond to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, thank you. That was actually part of the commission's discussion. I think we could tell you, and I would invite Commissioner Nichols or Mr. Litwack to tell you what it is that we need. Having said that, this was created through an agreement between the states and from the U.S. Congress. We think it's important that the states get together and have that discussion about what this agency needs, rather than us just telling you. We could do that. I'll tell you right now, I brought some materials. This is one of four budget binders that we're going to send to you just for the state of Oregon. I've got to do the same thing for the state of Washington, and I get to do that with no budget staff. That just sort of underlines one thing that we need. We need a consistent budgeting process that doesn't require us to have to report separately to two states independently. We would like some level of oversight. Right now, we have no oversight mechanism from the states. We're asking for you to work with your colleagues in Washington to create an effective bi-state oversight over our work. There's a long list of needs here. I mentioned 28 years worth of lessons. We'd like to work on those together with your permission.
Mr. Chairman, my comment is that this is no kind of endorsement for the Columbia River Gorge Commission, as far as I'm concerned. And what I'm hearing from the testimony is we've created a monster. We don't know what it is, what it does, how we're going to manage it here in the future. And why don't you create a task force to figure out what this commission that's already been created is supposed to be doing? I'm sorry, but that's where this testimony has led me. And I question the validity of the commission to begin with, if this is the testimony that we're receiving.
Mr. Chair, can I respond?
Sure, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am not a bashful commissioner. I'm here to tell you stuff, so I hope you're listening.
I'm listening.
All right.
We need your name, though.
I'm sorry. I'm Roger Nichols. I am Lasco County's appointee to the Columbia River Gorge Commission. I had the unique opportunity to observe this commission for a number of years as a member of the working press, as a reporter for the Dallas Chronicle. Was appointed to the commission in 2011. And
just your name, sorry.
Roger Nichols.
Thank you.
Roger
okay.
with a D.
Go ahead.
N-I-C-H-O-L-S.
Yeah.
And I have a handout that's got most of what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say maybe a little more strongly in order to get the message through. Over the last years, I've watched the commission dwindle from an organization that's been able to attack and solve problems, make changes in the management plan, and move forward, to a commission that can barely keep its doors open, and all the funds, problem comes from funding. There's a unique problem in the very structure of the original compact that says funding must be equal to the states. What that does is it makes us suffer for whichever state is in the worst financial condition any biennium. It is a race to the bottom. If this state has this much money, even if this one has less more and wants to give it, they have to back down to here. Next time, maybe this state's in trouble. And so we have been racing the bottom. We have cut our staff down to 5 people. We can't even field a basketball team with a sub on the bench. That's to administer this. That's where the problem comes from. We're hoping the task force will be able to open up the compact, which, by the way, is 28 years old. And most such programs get a look at every 10 or 15 or 20 years, so that maybe we can adjust that so we don't have to be held, and I'm going to use the word, hostage to whichever state's in the worst financial difficulty any biennium. That's a big problem. We think it's a major problem. Right now, also, our executive director alluded to the fact that we have double everything, double reporting staff, double this, double, and they don't match. So you can't just, like, do the one budget for the one state and then just cut, make a photocopy. Instead, you have to do a whole new separate thing. 5 people. We have a backlog right now of some 40 applications because we have one planner. That's what we can afford. So I apologize if I'm feeling a little strongly about this, but I firmly believe in this, and I believe that our problem has been one of education. We haven't been shouting here loud enough so people understand what it is. Tens of millions of dollars flow into the Columbia River Gorge every year from the millions of visitors. One of the problems that we're also facing is that we're starting to love it to death. We need effective ways of preventing erosion of all the scenic, natural, cultural, recreational resources in the past. This is not your father's gorge commission either. There were some problems in the earlier days. It's much more congenial, we have more effective group working now. It's not so divisive. We have a lot of people who are moderates, militant moderates, but moderates. And that's where we fall. I'm going to shut up now. I guess I don't want to alienate anybody, but I want to answer it with passion because I heard the passion in your voice, Representative Witt. I don't want to tell you that's where I come from.
Mr. Chair, I think you have, if I may.
We got a couple other questions. Okay. Vice Chair Helm. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question for Mr. Litwack, and we're getting there. And I think you're uniquely qualified to answer this question. And before I answer the ask the question, though. I wanted to draw an analogy for Representative Witt, which I think you'll understand a little bit better. This, what the commission is, from my understanding, I've been watching it for years because they are involved in land use. This is like telling the Department of Fish and Wildlife to go off and do their job with a tenth of the budget that they historically have had, with no oversight and protection from the Fish and Wildlife Commission, and having the mission of the Fish and Wildlife Department determined by the federal government and plopped down and abandoned. So the question for Jeff is, can you give us a little bit of the history of how the commission was formed, who said we had to have it, and how it's put together?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Helm. I wasn't anticipating giving a history talk.
It needs to be a short history, though.
But I'll keep it short. There's some debate as to when the conversation started, but we'll use about 1980 as a starting date. There were conversations about what to do with the Columbia River Gorge. There's some debate about why the conversation started. Some people will tell you that it was a subdivision that Skamania County in Washington was to approve right across from Multnomah Falls. The conversation revolved around, what do we do? This is a bi-state region. There's railroads on both sides. There's barge traffic. There's highways on both sides. It operates as one region. The federal government thought about, should this be a national park? The states ultimately, and in the early 80s, there were several bills in Congress to create something federal here. There, we're in Salem here. As 84 and 85 came around, the four senators convened, and the governors convened their staff and said, we've got to put something together here. And the idea of an interstate compact came about. So what is an interstate compact? It is an agreement between two or more states. As Mr. Nichols said, in most cases it requires the consent of Congress. That automatically gives some federal nature to the interstate compact. However, the point of an interstate compact is that it retains local control. It retains control in the states within a broad consent statute that Congress gives. And what we have here is a statute that creates a federal statute that authorizes the states to create a Columbia River Gorge Compact. The compact itself creates the Columbia River Gorge Commission. And the states enacted that in 1987. So our compact has been around for 28 years. The federal act really gave very little detail other than what I just said. It doesn't say how the states are to work together, how the states are to interact with the commission, how the commission is to interact with the states. It gives one broad statement that says that state agencies need to be given the authority and the power to work with the commission and to carry out their mandates in accordance with the National Scenic Area Act. That's it. That's the level of detail. So there's an interstate compact that gives slightly more detail. It talks about the funding mechanism. It talks about a quorum. It talks about a few things that are necessary to run a commission. That's 28-year-old technology. I've been studying compacts for the last 15 years. I've been teaching compact law for the last 10 years. I've been advising compacts around the country, and our compact is deficient in terms of giving an expectation of how the states are to interact with each other and interact with the commission, and then how the commission is to interact back with the states. This bill is the first time that the states have jointly decided it's time to take a look at the administration of the commission and say, what have we learned in 28 years? And how can we sort of use that to make the commission more functional? As Mr. Nichols said, the commission is asking for oversight. It's asking for the states to help the commission. It's asking for the state, for the states to give their opinions about what the commission ought to be doing. The commission hasn't always asked for that. But what we've learned in studying other compacts around the country is that where the states do not have that role with the compact agency, trouble happens. And that can be one state deciding, hey, let's try and maybe kill this commission. That's going on right now at the port of the Waterfront Commission of New York Harbor. New Jersey has a bill that says we don't need this thing anymore, let's just hand it over to the state police. Well, there's no similar bill in New York. In New Jersey, the New Jersey legislature has seven bills trying to recreate the administration of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Some of that is in response to the Bridgegate scandal that we all remember. But New York doesn't agree with that. They're not working together. And yet the agency is being whipsawed back and forth between the two states. And the commission is seeing a little bit of that with our funding. We've seen a little bit of that with state laws that require the commission to do certain reporting with one state, but then the other state doesn't require that or requires reporting in a different form. And yet there's five of us and we're unable to accomplish that. And so this bill is really the ability of the states and the commission to say, what do we need to make the commission something that's responsive to the states? And the commission is unusual. We're not a typical state agency that the state of Oregon, that you, your committee, that the Oregon legislature can unilaterally oversee. You do that with your state agencies. But the nature of a compact agency is that you can't do that. You have to do it jointly. And the states haven't done that yet, and that's what we're asking for in this bill. Does that answer your question?
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very grateful for the original designation, and I appreciate the gorge very much. But I am, too, a bit confused. If I've missed this part, could you just at least focus on your comment just a minute ago? What have the two states done to bring forward together the kind of bill? Do we have another bill in the state of Washington similar? Mm-hmm. And then my next line of questioning would be, where are the feds? Where is our delegation and the Washington delegation at this point? Because to me, I can't sort that out, but I can't imagine without their cooperation, without their funding, without their reassessment of what the original commission was, that we could move forward with any efficiency.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilliam, thank you. I think I heard three questions in there. What have the states done? They've created the commission. They've funded the commission enough to create the initial management plan that protects the gorge. That work was done in the late 1980s and early 1990s. The management plan essentially has not been updated since then. We've seen a lot of changes since then. We need to continue that work if we're going to continue to protect the gorge. That's the first thing I think we've done, the primary thing. The second question was, where are the feds? The federal government has a unique role, and that is primarily delegated.
Just go back, Mr. Chair, if I can, just for a second to interrupt. On that question, okay, that's a little bit about the history.
Yeah.
But what about this bill? where's the cooperation with Washington bringing this bill?
Okay, thank you. That was your second question. There is a companion bill, House Bill 1954, in the Washington legislature currently. And Representative Huffman has been working closely with his colleague, Representative Liz Pike, from the Camas area in Vancouver, to introduce bi-state legislation. So there is some cooperation now, and we're in contact, regular communication with both legislatures to ensure that the states are on the same page. If I may, Representative Gunn, get back to the role of the federal government. The role for the federal government in the National Scenic Area Act is primarily given to the United States Forest Service. And the federal government has made a fairly significant investment in land acquisitions and in planning for the most sensitive of the lands in the gorge. Those are overseen by that policy. If not, the lands themselves are overseen by the United States Forest Service. The way that the National Scenic Area Act and the bi-state compact are structured, the states are responsible to fund the commission and its planning work equally. So that responsibility really falls to the states. We lean on our federal agency partners as we can to get specific help, but the primary responsibility really falls to Oregon and Washington. This fall, in the fall of 2014, we asked Portland State University's Hatfield School of Government and the Daniel B. Evans School of Public Affairs at the University of Washington to give us some advice, getting back to the questions that Representative Witt asked earlier. What does it take for our agency to do its work? What we found is that for us to do everything that we're supposed to do under the National Scenic Area legislation would require a minimum staffing level of 25 and a half. The other finding that comes out of here is that the commission has never had the resources to do the job that it was asked to do. We've known that, but now we know it sort of officially, and we're coming back to you to say we've got 5 of the 25. In other words, we're 80% short on staffing, and you have in front of you a chart that shows how we've fared as an agency compared to inflation, with the consumer price index. We're way short of where we started. We need help if we're going to continue to host a bi-state national scenic area. We need the states to be working more closely together and more closely with the commission, and more importantly, investing in the future of the protections that we care about and in the economic support that the communities we work with desperately need.
And we have some other folks to testify on this, too, so I don't want to take all our time here. But Representative Witt.
I think my colleague was before me.
Oh, did you? Sorry. Yeah. Vice Chair Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm with my colleague. I'm a little confused. When Representative Huffman was here, he made a...
He's back.
He is here. Okay. He made a great case. It says here in front of me, authorizes task force on the Columbia River Gorge Commission. But then when I read the letter from the U.S. Senate, and I've been listening, so Representative Huffman was very simple. I understood what he said. Then you guys confused me. No offense, and I really don't want you to be offended, but I'm really confused now. He was fairly clear. I'm not getting you guys where you're at. And when I use this letter right here from the U.S. Senate, and I go to the line that says, today we understand the goals of the commission may be hamstrung by reduced funding at the state level to carry out its responsibilities. I thought this bill was to form a task force. What I'm hearing and what I'm reading is, no, we need funds because we don't have enough people, I don't have enough time, I don't have the usual. And I don't mean to be a smart aleck, but I'm kind of lost. I thought we were forming a task force, but really what we're doing is actually forming a task force and funding. And as long as Washington funds too, and I've heard this story before.
Okay.
It had to do with a bridge. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. First of all, my apologies for confusing the conversation. This is not a budget hearing, and I know that. We'll be back in front of you later this session with a budget request. We're asking the two states to form a task force to evaluate a couple of things. First of all, how can we work better together more efficiently and more effectively and in a more coordinated fashion? Because right now, we're not doing that. As a Northwest community, we're not working well together. We need the task force to evaluate options and alternatives for working better together. part of that conversation, I believe, necessarily will involve some discussion about the level of funding that it takes for the Northwest, for Oregon and Washington working together to host a national scenic area. We haven't had the tools we need to do basic implementation as a public agency. I find that embarrassing. It's a challenge that we face every day. We're asking the states to pay attention to both of those things. So the task force, we're asking the states to work together with the commission to figure this thing out. We're also recognizing that we're woefully behind in terms of providing basic accountability that we know you want, and we want you to be able to ask that of us. But when there's only five of us, and I have no budget staff, I have no HR staff, I have no IT staff, I don't have basic functions in the agency that I need to be a responsible public servant. I'm asking for both of those. Your help, so that we can be accountable, but also your investment, so that we can continue to be stewards of a place that is unbelievably beautiful, it's iconic, it's on the national, it's on the international radar screen as a destination.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here's what I've gotten out of the testimony to this point, and I have no intention of being trite in any manner, but I would liken it to a lost tribe, the Columbia River Gorge Commission, wandering through the desert for 30 years. During that 30 years, it doubled up on everything. And now it has returned, and it's waiting for a communique from the governments of Oregon and Washington to help establish the rules and guidelines upon which we operate going forward. Now, I understand, and maybe it's your candor that is so confusing to me, because what I have gathered is, for 30 years, we've kind of been a ship without a rudder. And it's time, we've learned after three decades that we need a rudder now. And if that's where we're at, I understand it. And it was literally so directionless that was the cause of my confusion. And I would say that that probably does demand some kind of direction, and probably first a decision, you know, do we stick a new rudder on, or do we sink the ship? I mean, I don't know, but and I know that the goals of the commission were exceedingly lofty, and protecting things that none of us as Oregonians or Washingtonians want to lose, so that's important. But I've got to tell you, if I were the person out on the street and I heard this, my faith in government and interstate compacts is probably no better than my faith sitting right here at this table. And it's unfortunate. It's terribly unfortunate. I think this is... I think we've disappointed the people that we're trying to serve. So, anyways, I've said more than enough, Mr. Chairman, and you've allowed me more time than I deserve.
Let me excuse this panel for now, because we've got some other folks to testify, and then other people here on a whole other bill. But we'll come back to it, because it's not obviously. Let me excuse you. Let me call the others up. Maybe I'll make my comments while they're switching chairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And then Peggy and Michael and Bob, can you come up? I think what I'm sensing is that the commissioners feel, without having legislative advocates built in, that if they go do a bunch of work to say, you know, hey, we need the compact reopen, and we need taxing authority to every tourist that comes in to every little business, we need a cent, so we have some money, or we need to be able to charge more when we do developments, you know, because there's a planning function they have, and we need this, we need that. I think they're afraid it's going to fall on deaf ears unless a task force of us thought of it, because they know that sometimes our egos are big enough that we need to be on the task force in order to want to carry water. And if it's just a commission bringing it forward, then, you know, maybe we didn't think of it, so therefore it's rejected. So you get some buy-in. I think that's what Representative Huff Catherine was trying to say, that when you have legislators bought in on the solutions, it's more likely to happen. Because otherwise, you've already got, yes, members from by states who could think of these solutions rather than legislators from by states who could think of these solutions. But I've been on a commission, and I wasn't particularly confident that legislators would care what I thought either, to be honest. And I don't remember ever asking for this kind of help, but I probably should have at one point or another, because my commission has since been dissolved. Please, would you please? And Bob, did you want to?
I'm going to let Michael have my
time. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Michael Lang. I'm Conservation Director for Friends of the Columbia Gorge. And Bob Olson is our Salem representative here in the Capitol, too, as you all know. But thanks for yielding your time. Friends of the Columbia Gorge was founded 35 years ago with the primary purpose of passing federal legislation and an interstate compact to create the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. We continue to be active in protecting and enhancing the scenic, natural, cultural, and recreation resources of the gorge, and also supporting the communities of the gorge as well. We have 5,500 members. First of all, I want to thank Representative Huffman and other sponsors of the bill for their interest in the Columbia River Gorge and the National Scenic Area Act and its implementation and the Gorge Commission. We certainly support their interest in having a well-functioning Gorge Commission. Having said that, we share those ideals, but we think this bill is the wrong vehicle to achieve that. And for that reason, we oppose this bill as it's currently drafted. I really appreciate the interest in the questions of the committee. I think you're getting close to the core here. There seems to be a separation between the goals expressed by Representative Huffman and the language of this bill. I'm struggling with it. Our organization is too. We'd love to be in a position of yes. We can't get there right now. And I provided some written testimony. I'm just going to highlight some of our concerns with the bill. First of all, and I'm going to go in reverse order, the state's created this interstate compact agency, the Columbia River Gorge Commission, with federal, with state, with county local government representation, with 13 members, to solve the questions that are being posed to you today. Our question is, why should we create a task force and use state resources to solve problems that we set out the Gorge Commission to solve, or at least provide some recommendations to you on how to better implement the National Scenic Area Act? So that's the first concern. Secondly, within the Act, there are references to amendments or changes to the National Scenic Area Act of federal law. Our group thinks that we ought to start with what is in the power of you all, and that is state law and an interstate compact, and an analysis if state laws and the interstate compact are being implemented properly to start with. And if there are implementation problems caused by the bi-state compact or other existing state laws or even commission rules, we ought to start there, not aiming way up high at the federal government and Congress, where we don't have quite as much influence. I'll just underplay that a little bit. And again, the focus should be on how to better implement existing laws. I'll give you an example. The bi-state compact requires all state agencies to carry out their respective functions in accordance with the Federal National Scenic Area Act. We don't think that state agencies are following that mandate of the interstate compact. Perhaps a starting point would be to take a look at what we can do to help this commission better implement existing rules and existing state law and the interstate compact. And then lastly, in the bill, the proposed composition of the task force would really end up with a representation of one party from the local districts that would serve in Oregon and Washington, plus representatives appointed by the governors. We think that amendments should be offered if this bill moves forward to ensure that there's bipartisan representation on that. The Gorge Commission has discussed amendments. They have them in writing. I don't know if they're going to offer them to you today, but I'm sure that that would improve this bill. But we're still at the point that we don't support this bill and we think it's unnecessary. I'll conclude my testimony there. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters has been a supporter of the Scenic Act and the Gorge since its inception. We come every year and we have a conversation with those of you on Ways and Means supporting additional funding for the Gorge Commission to carry out their duties. And we continue to do that and we'll continue to do that today. The story that you heard about the fact that there are, that we have two states and in various times their revenue is up and down, and it always has to be to the lowest common denominator. We get that. We are saddened by that. But we are concerned about this task force and whether or not this is the mechanism to have the conversation we really need to have. It is about funding. It is about making sure that we have the money we need for more than five people to help do this job. The other issues, I think, are really secondary and would actually fall under the purview of the current bi-state 13-member Gorge Commission. They, as you have heard with Commissioner Nichols, they do a great job of working together today. That's the group already put together to do this job. The money that you might consider spending on this task force would be better spent on actually helping them do their work. And I'm going to give another couple of comments. DLCD, the Department of Land Conservation and Development, provides every biennium grants to the Gorge counties to help them do their work within the Gorge. Not the Gorge Commission's work, but their work. I just read in the paper where Skamania County is now coming on board with the commission to assist in the Gorge Commission doing their planning and permitting. Oh, it was Klickitat, not Skamania? Sorry, thought it was Skamania. Anyway, one of the Washington County counties who have not stepped up in the past. So we are pleased to hear that people are beginning to recognize that somehow this Gorge Commission and this the work of this agency has to be funded. We have to get permits through the process. We have to have the conversations about the other kinds of jobs that they have to do. We're just concerned about this particular bill. I'm interested to hear what the amendments are, but I really think we have a Gorge Commission. And I'm thrilled. I thank Representative Huffman and Representative Johnson for bringing this bill to you. It's a conversation we need to be having. This is a most treasured place in Oregon, and we absolutely have to make sure that it's managed well. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Questions for these two? Vice Chair Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for coming. And we have both talked offline about a little bit about the Gorge and about land use issues in general. And I think you, Mike, you understand my passion for the Gorge and everything it already does for the citizens of both of our states. And I've watched the commission over the years and seen the workload that the commission is expected to undertake with insufficient resources and, to, in my opinion, too much focus, which the commission has no power over, on land use issues that cause all parties to go off into the weeds, use up that money, and never get to the planning part of the Gorge area that could really make it great. And so I guess if this is a genuine question, not meant to be critical of any party, if you don't think that this new approach is going to work, how do we ensure that the same old problems that have plagued the commission year after year of neglect and underfunding don't continue to be the case?
Mr. Chair, Representative Helm, Yes, we, and I think we share our support for the commission and the National Scenic Area Act and seeing it implemented properly, and also stable and adequate funding for the Gorge Commission to carry out its statutory functions. And commission funding has fluctuated over time. Right now, I think it's on par. It's very incremental, but it's third increase in the last three biennia. I'm not saying that that's enough funding for it. It needs more funding. But one thing that our group thinks we should be looking at is the use of the funding that's currently been appropriated. Funding has been appropriated to hire two new planners to help address the backlog of permitting in Klickitat County, Washington, where it has direct jurisdiction. Those planners have not been hired yet. We think the commission does need more funding than that, but I think that we ought to start with, well, how can they better use the funding that you all have appropriated to it for specific purposes within this biennium? You know, is the commission using those funds that you've provided, what, adequate or not, for what they set out and said that they were going to use it for? And if not, they should use it for the purposes laid out by this legislature and your colleagues in Washington State. From there, what additional funding do they need to carry out their respective functions? And again, we support an increase in their budget. I know that the commission director would certainly support a very large increase. Our position all along has been, yes, but let's do it incrementally. Let's make it real. Let's do it in bite-sized chunks where there's a political support, where the commission gets incremental increases in their funding. There's bi-state coordination, maybe even a memorandum of understanding or memorandum of understanding between the two states to get them where they need, but do it in a sustained way where they can build on their capacity, build on their achievements, bring outcomes to you every time you're in session to say, here, look at what we've achieved with the funding that you gave us. And perhaps not so much about, well, we didn't get enough. This is what we need. We need more. You know, do you follow that? Switch the dialogue, focus on outcomes and achievements, and then build the case for more funding in the next biennium. That's our suggestion.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All those things that you just stated are good management techniques, and I acknowledge that. Do you really think that that's going to reverse the problem that we have now of not having Washington on board, not having Klickitat County on board? I mean, I think historically speaking, we see a pattern of Washington not coming along when we do, or Oregon not coming along when Washington's ready to go. And we never get the funding that this place deserves from either state.
Mr. Chair and Representative Helm, I think that is a start in doing that. And I want to say that Washington, in particular Governor Inslee, supports the National Scenic Area Act. It strongly supports it, but as you're probably aware, Washington is under some very extreme budgetary pressures from a Supreme Court decision that requires adequate funding for public schools through K-12, and also a ballot measure that passed last year that reduces class sizes in public schools. So there's acute funding problems there. Across the board, agencies are getting their budgets reduced. The governor actually came in at a slightly higher governor's proposed budget than the current biennium. So in that sense, the commission is an anomaly, and the governor did express strong support by incrementally proposing to increase their budget. The longer term problem, as far as stabilizing funding for the Gorge Commission, I don't have a magic answer for, but I think in starting and looking at the existing coordination between the state, looking at whether the states are properly implementing the compact and fulfilling their obligations that currently exist under the compact is where you start, not as this bill would do, look at changes to the federal National Scenic Area Act while ignoring the other implementing laws that are on the state and regional level.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your perspective on it. Thank you.
Okay, I think we are going to take a break here from this issue. And Representative Huffman, come on up.
Two words, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59. Just a couple of things. I think, you know, it is a conversation starter, House Bill 2039, and I think several of us have weighed in, the Gorge commissioners and whatnot, that they would like to see an amendment. I'm not opposed to amending it. My goal would be to have a bipartisan task force working. But I think Michael actually touched on some of the stuff that really the task force needs to look at. I think there's a lot to look at. I think there's a lot of education that needs to be done. The appropriation for money for Klickitat County planning is one of the things that I think the task force needs to look at. Why hasn't Klickitat County adopted the ordinances? Why aren't they a part of the group? Why does the Gorge Commission have to provide the planning for that county alone? You know, that's just one of many, many questions I think the task force needs to look at. But I think the bottom line for me as a Ways and Means member in this body is if we are going to appropriate $900,000 or $1.5 million per biennium, whatever the amount is, we deserve the ability to have some oversight and have a task force working with the body that's receiving the money and make sure that the money is being spent wisely, usefully, and they're accountable and transparent for it. So from a Ways and Means standpoint, I think I have every right to ask for this task force to keep an eye on the group that's spending the money we're investing.
I think the challenge people are having is maybe we're looking maybe for a precedent. Because you've got a commission, which is made up of volunteers, then you've got a staff. And right now what we think of in commission land is that is the oversight of the staff. So you got the whatever commission, you've got the staff, and then you have a commission that we've delegated legislative authority to a commission to oversee a staff so we don't have to be involved in the minutiae of their business. And I'm trying to think of other ones where we also then would have a task force to go along with a commission to go along with overseeing a staff. And we've done it on an ad hoc basis for sure. You know, there's been times where agencies had problems and we had to go in and, you know, establish either that or you haul them in front, you know, O-win, you haul them in front of the legislature over and over and over to try and resolve their problems. I think what you're trying to do is get a more institutionalized body to solve some of these problems and just keep having them come back to Ways and Means or a committee like this over and over until they're solved. But I can't think of myself one exactly that fits, but I'm trying to find some precedent in my mind some analogy to compare it to. Like maybe it's the sister state relationship with China. We have a committee of the legislature made up of just legislators that then works with a private council, I think it is, to do our sister state work. Something like that we can get our arms around here.
Well, Mr. Chair, if the body chose to expand the task force and have one or two public members from Oregon, one or two public members from Washington, in addition to the governor's office and legislators, you know, I'm open to looking at that. I also serve on the Oregon Hanford Cleanup Board. You know, there's a little federal piece of property called the Hanford Reach, and there are billions of dollars a year spent there for cleanup. I sit on an Oregon board that oversees those operations, the safety aspect, the spending of money, the cleanup operation. We work with Washington Department of Natural Resources. So I think that's kind of a quasi-example of a task force that oversees something done federally that we didn't really necessarily do anything about in 1940. We didn't, but anyway, it's there.
It's only a two-year task force. The goal is to come in, make a report about these various challenges, and then goes away, and hopefully we sign off on some of the recommendations made. We get Washington to sign off on some of their recommendations made. If there's federal approvals needed, then, you know, we get those, and then the commission can function much, much more effectively.
That's right, Mr. Chair. And I guess why now and not 5 years ago or so? In the last 16 months or so, there have been some studies that have come in from PSU and Ruckelshaus, and anyway, I'm going to get them wrong, but we've got studies based on recommendations, and I thought it would be great to have a bi-state task force to take those studies, go to the commission, look at the study recommendations, and say, what do you guys need? What do we as states feel like we need for our bang for the buck? out of the Gorge Commission, and seemed reasonable to me.
I think one of the things that Ways and Means people, Representative Gomberg and I both serve on the Natural Resources Sub where this commission resides, we're hearing from ODF&W, Forestry, Dogami, almost every agency in the natural resource world seems to basically say their funding mechanism and business model is broken to the point where they're about to go under. And there must be some pattern, like it all needs to go to schools, like in Washington, or it all needs to go somewhere else. And the fee payers can only pay so much to absorb these regulatory functions, or else they can't pay it in the agriculture and timber and whatever world. So we have some major problem that's not just in this commission, apparently, in how to fund things in this state, particularly in the natural resource arena, because you're not the only ones who are having a really soul-searching moment on their budgets at the moment. Okay, we've got to go do a little work on some nice water levees and drainage districts that people have come. Yeah, Roger, how critical are you? Yeah, okay, I know you're critical, but today that would be helpful. So let me close the public hearing on House Bill 2039 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2277. And I have Reed, Hong, and Mark as my first three, but if that's not the way you want to do it, then bring up whoever you want.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here today on behalf of Multnomah County Drainage District. I've asked Reed Wagner, the Executive Director of Multnomah County Drainage District, and Hong Nguyen, who is a partner at Miller Nash and the legal counsel for MCDD, to join us today. At this point, I'm going to turn over the mic to Mr. Wagner to give you a briefing on MCDD and what it is we are trying to do, and then I will follow up with some concluding remarks.
For the sake of redundancy, my name is Reed Wagner. I'm the Executive Director of the Multnomah County Drainage District. I also manage three other districts along the Columbia River between Sandy and Smith and Bybee Lakes. There are drainage districts all over the state in different forms. I think Representative Witt, in the last time we spoke on another bill, alluded to the fact that some haven't met since World War II. They're in different states. And some of them function and some of them don't. We think there's about 44 drainage districts that are active right now across the state. Our districts were formed in 1917. They're formed to drain agriculture. That's what the statute was made for, and that's what we did at the time. We weren't formed to work with industrial area, and we weren't formed to provide flood protection. In the 1950s, following the Vanport floods, the Army Corps of Engineers came into the area and completed the levee system, built out the levee system to make it more secure. At the time, an agreement was signed with Multnomah County Drainage Districts and each of the other districts to provide maintenance for these areas. Maintenance like mowing the lawn, maintenance like making sure that these levees didn't erode away. What we do is we drain property, and we do this through sloughs and pump stations, and we provide flood protection by maintaining that levee, making sure development that goes into that levee isn't going to have negative impact on it, making sure there aren't vulnerabilities in that levee system, and working with our Army Corps of Engineer partners that we're under contract with to live up to their standards. The area that we protect includes residential neighborhoods, 40% of the Port of Portland operations, $5.3 billion in assessed property value, 10% of jobs in Multnomah County, 20% of large lot industrial futures. And I think extremely important, these levees also protect economic growth by ensuring flood insurance protection, as well as development for the future. So if these levees were not recognized as accredited, the flood insurance program would no longer apply to these properties, and these properties would also fall in a flood zone and would not have the same type of development futures as otherwise stayed. So we've experienced a lot of flooding along the Columbia River. In the last 100 years, we've experienced five, excuse me, in the last 120 years, we've experienced five 100-year level events. One would suggest that a 100-year level event means it only happens once every 100 years. We've had it happen five times. We've had two 500 level events over the last 120 years. These floods have devastating impacts on the communities. In Vanport alone, in 1948, at least 15 people perished and an entire community was devastated by the flood. So why we're here is we've accepted these great responsibilities of flood protection, maintaining these levees, living up to the core standards, and by meeting those core standards, ensuring that the Army Corps of Engineers will come in and help us to flood fight when we have a high water event, and also the Corps would come in and help us repair the levee to the extent that it needs to be repaired after that high water event. We also have the FEMA program, and these FEMA programs are applied for by the land use authorities in the area. We don't have land use authority. Not really into getting into land use authority, and that's not what we're asking for, but we work with our partners that do. So in our case, the cities and the counties that cover the unincorporated areas, they maintain that FEMA accreditation so that the flood insurance continues and the development rights continue. So we do that in a partnership. As we were alerted that we needed to upgrade our levees, we pulled together the community, and that's co-chaired by the mayor of Portland as well as Commissioner Jules Bailey from Multnomah County. We brought local governments beyond them, business community, environmental community, neighborhood associations. Idea was to bring everybody together, identify the needs for meeting these federal standards and do them together collaboratively. The one thing this group can't do is change our statute to live up to those responsibilities that were signed off on by the in the 1950s with the Corps of Engineers. So we're coming to you today to ask that we are able to update our statute to meet those responsibilities that were agreed to so many years ago and provide great service to the area. Any other? And happy to answer any questions.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to highlight a couple of things that are contained in the measure that is before you. We do and have asked for an amendment that is still presently sitting in Legislative Council. We have been working with our partners in trying to get some language that everybody is comfortable with and believe that we'll be able to do so. In the last 24 hours, we have heard a couple additional concerns from the Oregon Farm Bureau and Water Watch, and I'll certainly attempt to address some of those as well. But let me just briefly explain, if I may, quickly, three things that this bill will accomplish and allow for the district and other districts that are facing similar challenges will allow them to do. The first thing that the measure would do is allow for a drainage district to essentially go through a public process to adopt the ability to enact ordinances related to flood control projects. Right now, the statute is rather silent on drainage districts as to whether or not they can undertake flood control activities. This measure's intent is to do that. It is also intended to provide the districts the ability to pass ordinances and enforce those ordinances. So, for example, if a individual property owner were to somehow either inadvertently or purposely create an encroachment onto a levee, the ability for the district to actually force that individual or compel that individual to remove that encroachment is really at this time non-existent. And therefore, the ability for the drainage district to be able to manage the facilities that they are contractually responsible for with the federal government is a key ingredient to this measure. A second component of the bill would require In the only the case of Multnomah County, we have this bill would make flood control an urban service. Why is that important? The importance of that is that it would, as a result, force those cities who overlap with the drainage district in Multnomah County to enter into an urban service agreement. As Mr. Wagner previously mentioned, he mentioned about development. Well, in the city of Portland, the planning department, and I forget the name that they call it now, it used to be the building department, issues building permits to folks in order to improve their property or build new structures. What we want to ensure is that communication and coordination between the building department or, for example, Portland's transportation department, that communication takes place prior to any work being conducted on or around a levee to ensure that that work will not in somehow or some way violate the regulations that the Corps has on encroachments and how the levees must be maintained. Again, we have been working with the City of Portland, and presuming that we get the amendments out of Legislative Council the way we all agreed to, I believe that the City of Portland is agreeable to this and have submitted a letter in support of the measure. Another thing that I wanted to point out very briefly in Section 1.
Very briefly, because they're going to kick us out of here in 3 minutes.
All right, very good. I'll stop there, Mr. Chair, and just perfect. Open myself up to any questions that you have. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? And will there be an amendment coming, it sounds like, so we'll talk more about it at that point as well. Okay, thank you. Lauren Smith, did you want to get in here for a second? All right.
Oops. Chair Kleb, members of the committee, for the record, I am Lauren Smith. I'm the policy coordinator at Oregon Water Resources Congress, and OWRC members are local government entities that include irrigation districts, water control districts, water improvement districts, and drainage districts, and Multnomah County Drainage District is one of our members. We just wanted to let you know that we are supportive of HB 2277 because it's going to provide drainage districts with the tools and the flexibilities that they need to continue to provide the vital services to the lands that they serve. The optional provisions of this bill are going to protect individual patrons, businesses, landowners, and the general public from flooding. So that's all. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for Lauren? Okay, so we'll see you back after your amendments are done and talk about this further. Let me close the public hearing on House Bill 2277. And I think we sent Mr. Randy away, so I think I'll just carry over the work session. We can do it quickly at the beginning of the next meeting on House Bill 2457, carried over. And with that, anything else for the good of the order? Interesting committee that I thought would take like 45 minutes once again and didn't quite work out that way. Thank you, colleagues.